And the markets have a strange, strange day in the wake of U.S. GDP numbers that seemingly send some very mixed signals about where growth and inflation are heading. That makes for some wild price action here as we digest over the course of the day. But through it all, an interesting message emerging for Wall Street, for the dollar, and also for how this all sets up in relative terms when we look at the comparison between the U.S. and Europe. Because if there is one thing we learned in this very mixed set of economic indicators that came across the wires today, and those coming at us throughout the week, as well as early next week, it seems like there is a widening disparity between the U.S. and Europe and a trading opportunity emerging therein. So what we're going to do here is look at what all of these variables look like, line them all up, and consider what they give us as a trading thesis and how we might proceed going forward. So, first, let's take a look at the specifics. Here's what U.S. GDP looked like at the headline. And, of course, the eye-catching bit here is to see that this right here, this first quarter bar, is painfully below 2%. The expectation here was that it would register at 2.5%. Some averages had it at 2.4. The Fed's own thinking when it updated its March summary of economic projections was that we would be averaging 2.1% for the year. This is actually slower than even the Fed's "we think we're going to do three rate cuts" type of thinking. And certainly way off from the expectations that even the most pessimistic of Fed models had going into this. When we spoke about the expectations for this GDP number on the show yesterday, we found that it is somewhere in a range of 1.7 to 2.7%, if we looked at the New York Feds, the St. Louis Feds, the most pessimistic, and the Atlanta Feds GDP nowcasts, where they take incoming economic information and try to build models to divine what GDP is going to look like. This was even weaker than the lowest of that range. But then, not all is what seems to be at the headline, because if we look even just a bit below the surface, the inflation component baked into this report was a blisteringly hot result. A core inflation, the annualized rate in the first quarter, 3.7%. That's way above the expectations that we had at 3.4%, and certainly a far cry from the 2% in the prior quarter. So we clearly are looking at a very disparate story here. On the one hand, seemingly weak growth, at least in relative terms. On the other, quickening inflation, which of course got immediate response from the financial markets. They went directly to baking out that the Fed was even less likely to raise interest rates two times this year. We instead moved to 29 basis points baked in for Fed policy cuts this year. That, of course, gives us a situation where we have a single cut still baked in, But the chance of a second one, a mere 14% here. So the situation looking like the Fed is going to have to do more tightening, not less, or at least appear more hawkish, not less, relative to expectations before this release, despite the fact that we have a situation here where growth appears softer at the headline. And so once we look under the surface, we start to see perhaps how you reconcile some of these things. So let's go ahead and take a look there. Here's the components. And what we find is that growth was actually not nearly as negative as the headline number appears. Of course, we know that consumption is about 70% of U.S. GDP growth. And we can see here, there is not a dramatic falling away in that part of the story. Certainly, we have a bit of a slowdown here. No question about that. But the range of outcomes here, pretty close. And consumption still quite strong on the whole. The big shocking difference here seems to be right here. Net exports shaved off almost a full percentage point from the overall growth number. As a matter of fact, if we take government outlays, inventories, and net exports off the table, we end up with, after adjusting for inflation, a very strong 3.5% reading on core real GDP growth. That's a very favorable result and broadly in line with give or take a 3% handle on that reading over the recent quarters. So this is looking much less ominous once we even consider just net exports as a bit of an aberration here than the headline number seems to imply. What's interesting is that the reason that net exports is such a downdraft on this is because imports soared. And that is not a bad thing per se, because what it suggests is strong consumer demand and, of course, a strong dollar, which improves the purchasing power of U.S. consumers when they go and they buy imported goods. So we have a situation here that is ostensibly much more benign from a growth perspective than 1.6% GDP growth would suggest. In fact, it looks like consumption is in good shape, and this down bar on net exports is there mostly because U.S. consumers are so much out there buying things that imports jumped a lot. That isn't necessarily a bad thing when it comes to the economic growth engine. And perhaps this is how you reconcile what's going on here with inflation being very strong and the headline growth number being perhaps deceptively soft. So, with that in mind, what do we have left on the docket? The last bit of macro data for the week is going to be the Fed's favored monthly PCE inflation index. And here, what we're looking at is a familiar story. Goods inflation is essentially absent. That lines up with what we just saw in GDP, the contributions to consumption overwhelmingly by an increasing margin coming from the service side and not the goods side. Housing is holding about steady. Food inflation has been all but totally squeezed out. That's a global phenomenon. Food costs jumped significantly and have been falling now for quite a while, since about the middle of last year. And that has significantly eroded food inflation for really everybody involved. This is a globally set kind of thing, and it has cooled all over. The sticking part, of course, still services. Energy continues to be a slightly deflationary influence here. Now, the expectations have us meeting at the core and the headline at 2.6%. For the core, that's a downtick from 2.8. For the headline, that's a rise from 2.5. Arguably, if we look at the CPI numbers ahead of this, that is because the disinflationary influence from energy, as that rebalances from this spike here. This was, of course, right around the Russia-Ukraine situation first coming into the calculus. And since then, of course, it has been worked away. And you can see this rebasing here, where energy is actually deflationary in the overall mix. And you can see that influence wane as you get, first off, since the start of the year, a bit of a pop in crude oil. And secondly, of course, as base effects take hold. So the CPI numbers would suggest that the reason you've had a bit of a firmer thing going on at the headline inflation number here is largely that it isn't really the core services part moving in an adverse way. Though, of course, again, looking at what we just saw in GDP numbers, there's clearly lots of strength there. At least those numbers would suggest as much. In general, though, the PCE number is unlikely to be terribly market moving, because you can get the forecasts of what this number is going to look like pretty well dialed in by looking at CPI, PPI, and of course now the PCE component in the GDP data set. So that this is likely something that is going to be generally leaving of Fed policy odds broadly where they are seems like the path of least resistance. Seems like we're not going to get a number here that's going to shock anyone, unless, of course, something truly dramatic is going to occur. But having seen the data we've already seen, that seems unlikely. And so what we're left with is an interesting picture. Because where we end up is U.S. growth is about steady. The weakness at the headline seems a bit misleading, but there does seem to be a cooling somewhat over the course of the past three quarters. We can see that here just in the consumption numbers. So you can readily see that these bars are getting a little bit softer here in the first quarter as relative to where they were at the tail end of last year. So a bit of cooling, but nothing dramatic. But inflation is stubbornly high. And it's seemingly stuck in the service sector here, and to some extent in housing, and demanding that the Fed be much more reticent to cut rates, which of course is what we see reflected in the move higher today in yields and the Fed policy outlook, as we mentioned earlier, going from about 30 odd basis points now to 29 for the year. This is a stark contrast to what we see in Europe. Between Monday and Tuesday next week, we are going to get German and Eurozone inflation data, and that is going to show us, when we kind of put it all together, that inflation held at 2.4% year on year. That would be a move lower over the past 2 months to a 4 month low, but it would match for April the outcome from March. And so this is seemingly a very different story. Here, inflation is in fact showing signs of responding to dominant dynamics, as well as to slowing and to efforts by the ECB. So what we see most potently here in the last set of numbers from March is that those things that were the main catalysts are unraveling, and those things that are now the main things holding up inflation are generally susceptible to the unwinding that comes with more sluggish economic growth. So food here was the main, overwhelmingly, as a matter of fact, the main catalyst for sticky European inflation last year. And we can see, of course, as of the March numbers, that has cooled considerably. It's only adding just over 30 basis points here to the overall sort of percentage calculus at the headline. So just 0.3 percentage points of the 2.4% rise in March was coming from food. That's compared to closer to 1%, 0.9%, 0.8%, where it was last year. When we look at the sort of lingering bit here, it seems to be mainly stuck in discretionary spending categories. So over here, a little bit in the miscellaneous part, sure, but mainly here in hospitality. That seems to be the main area. And of course, where you have a situation that's sort of susceptible to economic conditions, hospitality kind of naturally sticks out as discretionary spending. As you get a slowdown in growth, this is where you would expect to see a bit of softness. So in the case of Europe, you seem to be on a path clearly toward the kind of disinflation that has the ECB start to cut rates. And indeed, they're angling to do as much based on their rhetoric as soon as June. When we look at the PMI numbers that we got out of Europe this week, the story is of accelerating growth. Take a look at the composite number here. It came out at 51.4 against 50.8. And of course, this is, as ever, in the logic of PMIs. So north of 50 is growth, under 50 is contraction. The further you go above 50, the faster the growth. The further you go below 50, the faster the contraction. So although the manufacturing sector in Europe still looks anemic, services, which is a much bigger part of the economy, is apparently booming. And that's pulling the overall economy higher. In fact, that's an 11-month high on the overall pace of economic activity growth in Europe. And stacks up quite interestingly against the numbers out of the US, where we can see growth is on balance a little bit soggier when we look at the April numbers. And as we just looked at, in the GDP report, there's some slight stepping down. Not, again, as dramatic as the headline would suggest, but certainly some stepping down in the pace of growth in the first quarter as relative to the fourth or the third of last year. And what this creates is a very interesting divergence. On the one hand, inflation is hotter in the US than it is in Europe. On the other hand, growth is trending seemingly better, not in absolute terms, but in terms of the path that it's taking in Europe versus the US. There seems to be acceleration in Europe, deceleration in the US on growth. Meanwhile, hotter inflation in the US and more broadly cooling inflation in Europe. And what that, of course, digests into is an increasing divergence on monetary policy expectations. As we said just moments ago, the Fed seen cutting just 28 basis points over the course of this year. That compares dramatically with what the ECB is seen doing there, baked in for 72 basis points. That's a disparity of two cuts. And so when we look at this, there's basically two ready conclusions. On the one hand, the dollar is likely to maintain a significant yield advantage against the euro and perform well. On the other hand, stock markets in the US might turn out a bit sluggish as relative to what we see in Europe. Because if in Europe you have a mix of lowering interest rates and a perking up of economic momentum, in the US, you see higher interest rates and a cooling somewhat of economic momentum, which seems to create this kind of bifurcated view where if we live in the world of stocks, the opportunity might be for something like an EZU, the Europe ETF from iShares, outperforming the likes of SPY, the benchmark S&P 500 ETF in the US, whereas the Euro 6E on the futures might be heading lower in US dollar terms as we move forward. And that is macro money for today. As ever, we are here every Monday through Thursday, just after overtime, although today overtime was on repeat. We will be back with live shows, of course, next week. That is a show where we look at the Wall Street close and what it might mean going forward, co-hosted by myself, Chris Vecchio, and Dylan Radigan. I'm back on with Chris tomorrow for Futures Power Hour, on with Tom and Victor for First Call on Sundays, back with Victor on Wednesdays for The Price of Truth, a show that we did yesterday. Definitely worth your time to check out. Writing for the news and insights portion of tastylive.com and opining on the platform formerly known as Twitter at Ilya Spivak. Thanks very much for joining. Macro Money's back next week. Futures Power Hour is on tomorrow. See you then. Take care.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing